And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
The Athletic.
Yesterday, Nottingham Forest sacked Steve Cooper after a run of just one victory in their last 13 games.
Oh, Yates with a mistake. It's Pereira. It's Kearney. It's fine.
While the supporters mourned the departure of a coach widely regarded as the best since legendary club figure Brian Clough back in the 80s, this is a story that will resonate with fans all over the world. There is no room for sentiment in modern football. And with Nuno Espirito Santo unveiled as Cooper's successor, do Forest have a plan, or are they just the latest example of a Premier League side run entirely on the impulses of a rich owner? I'm Ayo Akinwolere. Welcome to the Athletic Football Podcast. All right, let's get into this. In the studio, we've got The Athletic's Nick Miller. We've also got Daniel Taylor, Tim Spears, and of course, David Ornstein, just to break things up as they like to do it here on the Athletic Football Podcast. Right, Danny, let's get into Marinakis, because, you know, in terms of the relationship between Cooper and, you know, the owner of the club, from, I mean, I was reading your piece, it's fair to say it's rather fraught relationship, and it always has been in a very strange way.
Well, funnily enough, Steve Cooper was told the news by another member of staff yesterday. And he also, you know, he knew that Nuno was in the building and between the training ground and the stadium. And it was all sort of very strategically done to keep the two of them apart. So even in these sort of circumstances, you know, basically he and Marinakis, you know, the relationship was broken. It's been broken for a long, long time. A lot of it is unpleasantness and a lot of it is fractious and not what you really want at a football club. So last night, it did actually end in Steve Cooper going into the boardroom at Forest and basically having an amicable chat with the owner and shaking hands, agreeing that it'd been, you know, they'd enjoyed some good times together and kind of leaving it in a very sort of grown up kind of way. Whereas, you know, I think a few other people would have certainly been very offended and put out to wake up to knowing that there's another guy flying in to take your job. Steve and a lot of people around him felt that there'd been some pretty underhand things happening, stories appearing in the media, all sort of seemed designed to undermine him and just, as I say, various bits of unpleasantness. You know, it is a very hard-faced environment and they make no apologies for that. And I think basically, I say that almost without criticism because I think by now I've kind of just got used to the idea that it's great that they put the investment in and the ambition. And if you remember back to the previous owner who had neither proper investment or proper ambition or he had ambition, but it was kind of like a fantasy land ambition, then it's great. You know, everyone welcomes this. It's just basically for that, the price of that in a way is that you have to understand that Forest is going to be run in a certain way that is not what we're really used to. It's far more what they're obviously used to at Olympiacos. And that involves quite hostile. It can be quite hostile. There can be explosions of temper. There can be staff who are almost living in fear of, you know, I went to Athens once. I remember basically I was in the building and then there was a female member of staff who suddenly realized that she was wearing the wrong colors. Because Mr. Marinakis doesn't like anyone wearing purple because he thinks it's unlucky, and he doesn't like anyone wearing green because it's, you know, the colour of one of their rivals. And the panic on this woman's face, you know, there is this kind of like desperation to not displease the owner, who despite the fact he, you know, is flying between two different countries and has two different clubs, he takes incredibly hands-on role, you know, right down to what goes out on social media. And he ultimately just didn't share the fans' enthusiasm for Steve Cooper. And he thought that the praise was over the top, bearing in mind what had happened in the 18 months in the Premier League. He couldn't understand how someone that was involved in a relegation fight could get all these songs and the adulation that Steve Cooper got. And basically, he resented it, I think. Well, and that's not just me who thinks that. And it became a thing. It became basically staff had to be careful what goes out on social media, you know, numerous stories of conflict behind the scenes. So yeah, so this is the price you have to pay for all the good stuff. So there's good and there's bad. And I think most Forest fans would agree that the good outweighs the bad. But there are times where it's a pretty close run thing.
I'm just sort of playing devil's advocate here. This is a guy who's won, what, 10 out of 12, you know, trophies or whatever, Olympiacos. He's probably got a thing in his head thinking, well, I've proven that I can do this. And this is how I work. So if you're not going to play by my rules, see you later. I mean, you know.
Exactly. And what he's done in Greece, it stands up for him and it works. And people are used to that regime. It's just taken a bit of getting used to. And listen, the people that run Forest will admit there have been significant cultural differences between how they run Olympiacos and how they run Forest. And shouting at people in England doesn't necessarily is sort of something that was a little bit consigned to the past. You know, these kind of like very kind of like old school football kind of thing of just basically, you know, if they lose, it's fury and just basically, and you know, and a part of me kind of like really, you know, the expectations and the ambitions are really impressive, but there's just basically it's undone by, you know, they've spent so much money and you just kind of think, look, just got to be a little bit, you know, got to be a little bit wiser sometimes and a bit more emotional support for the manager, you know, and there's all sorts of stuff, you know, that just kind of like slightly unorthodox. Like, you know, his son is effectively the de facto sporting director, you know, 24-year-old guy, you know, might be a very intelligent guy or, you know, might eventually be very good at this, but it's just, you know, there are some horror stories along the way. You know, a lot of people leave Forest feeling incredibly bruised. And I think Steve Cooper will feel pretty raw, even if it, you know, it did end in a handshake. You know, it's been some pretty, like I say, unpleasant, I think is probably the best way to say it.
Well, Danny uses the word raw there, but I also think many will feel that Steve Cooper's better off out of there, given the environment that he was working within. And I think Danny's being quite polite at times and scratching at the surface. Because when you speak to people around the industry, they describe it as being pretty toxic and volatile and like tempestuous. And again, I think that's quite a polite way of putting it at times. This is just the way that Evangelos Marinakis seems to work and to run Forest and behave. And in Danny's piece, he talks of like the expectations of where he wants to get to with Forest. And he will be of the view that he's brought in a quality and a number of players that should have produced better results and performances. And at times, Steve Cooper in the early Premier League days, I think, was relying on quite a lot of the players who got him up from the Championship and a British core. Whereas I think the owner would have liked to have seen many of the newer signings integrated. And I don't think we've really paused to quite realise and appreciate just how difficult that must have been for everybody at Forest. They are unprecedented numbers of signings. A £250 million spend is probably unprecedented for a team at that level. Of course, we've seen higher teams spend bigger amounts, but the numbers in and out, that's just in the playing squad. And it was just like, who's coming in next and who's recruited this player and where do they fit into the style and the system and the group and the dynamic and behaviorally? And I don't mean this in an insulting way, but it seemed from the outside to be carnage in the transfer market. And that's not conducive to settled training sessions, let alone preparation for matches and tactics. And the more you think about it, it just seems an extraordinary state of affairs that we've just lived through in many forms, and not just in terms of the playing personnel, but the staff too. So there have been changes at sporting director level, at chairman level. There have been, you know, the set piece coach, even right down to a discrepancy over who that would be. And maybe that is the way that yeah, Marinakis runs it, and you got to lump it or leave it.
Yeah, Nick, you look at A guy who's had, what, 20 different managers, 14 with Olympiacos, what, 6 with Forest. And you look at his first, what, summer, Olympiacos has funded 19 new signings while he was there. But also look at the signings he made in the Premier League. I mean, there's a whole heap of players that have come in to Forest. I mean, a bit like the Chelsea situation. Could you even cram them all into the change room? But there's a clear pattern here of a guy who likes to spend to get what he wants.
Yeah, it's just the as kind of Danny and David have alluded to, it's the ambition is great, but it's just how that ambition is sort of channeled. Mm. There seems to be kind of three or four different plans that are sort of mushed together, which is kind of reflective of the number of people who are making the signings. They've recruited a couple of promising young players from South America who the idea being presumably to kind of sell on for more money, and then they've made some kind of, you know, free transfers that you'd think, you know, that's a kind of shrewd signing that a club on a kind of real budget might sign. And then there were a bunch of players that brought in from the Bundesliga who were apparently based on, you know, a lot of kind of data that went into the recruitment of those players. So all of those things are fine, but when you kind of throw them all together, it just becomes very kind of confused. And there are, as you know, as the guys have said, different people recruiting different players. And yeah, you would just like it to be a little bit more focused.
And just a tiny addition, it's not just the personnel that has been upgraded or being in need of upgrade, but also the facilities. I've spoken to a couple of people at Forest that say, you know, this is like a mid-championship level structure and infrastructures and physical and sort of technical, the data, the scouting, the analysis, the sports science. This is a team that was out of the Premier League for 23 years. So they're still in the process of trying to bring the training ground, the stadium up to the modern level. And some of those crucial things behind the scenes that make so many of these clubs at the forefront and sing and dance in a way that is fit for purpose in 2024 now, coming up to in the Premier League, are not there at Forest. And that is another area of improvement that's needed, even though it gets a lot less attention.
Yeah, but some would say, what, Marinakis has reduced the club's debt by converting 11 million of loans into shares for the financial year 22 to 23.
This again comes back to the good point. So this is a guy with big pockets, deep pockets. They always make sure that these stories come out and it's, you know, very brilliantly timed just before Steve Cooper goes. You know, there's all sorts of games going on in the background that people sometimes aren't aware of. But ultimately, this is the side that the fans have to be grateful for. He is funding the club to a level that it hasn't been funded before. You know, that has to be the case if he wants to meet his expectations. You know, there isn't a club in the Premier League, though, they're not putting in, you know, big money with, you know, perhaps the exception of a couple in the relegation places. But, you know, if he wants to be a top 10 club, which is his ambition, then he's going to have to do that. But he also needs a little bit of realism and patience sometimes, because just look at Aston Villa and how many years they spent. Look at Brighton. Before Brighton became what they are now, they had, you know, four or five seasons in the zone that I think Forest realistically should be aiming for now, which isn't trying to be a top 10 side now, which basically means like getting another 10 to 14 points, overtaking the likes of Brentford and Fulham and West Ham and all these clubs that are a bit more established. You just have to sometimes temper with a bit more realism. But equally, you know, it's not our name above the door. So like I said, coming to my earlier point, you just have to understand that for the money, you have to understand that this is the way the club's going to be run. And it is a bit like David said, you like it or lump it, because that's what it is. It's not going to change. It's not going to pull back and completely change the way they are.
One interesting point on what Danny said there is how they operate in the market moving forward. So I think the sale of Brennan Johnson for around £50 million has drawn a bit of a line in the sand. It's put down a marker that Forest can trade in the other direction as well, which would have been a huge boost for them on their financial fair play situation. And now they've got a couple of assets too. If you look at, say, Murillo, who is being talked about quite heavily, Morgan Gibbs-White as well. We've known them only sort of operating in one direction largely over the last couple of years. But let's see if when Danny references the likes of Brighton and others, they trade outwards to it. And that could, in theory, if things calm down a bit, see Forest become a bit more sustainable financially. And that recent investment by Marinakis, or conversion of debt into shares, is not the first time he's done that. I think it's happened 3 or 4 times before. So there is a financial concern here, and it can't really continue in that way unless he wants to keep bankrolling it. And that's at his own expense, which is obviously a financial fair play concern.
You're listening to the Athletic Football Podcast with Ayo Akinwalere.
Steve Cooper's gone. He's left Nottingham Forest. I guess the only surprising thing about this news is how long it took owner Marinakis to do it. So why now?
Yeah, I think everyone was a little bit surprised. I mean, just in general, it feels like it's been a couple of weeks away from happening for, you know, better part of a year. Obviously lost 5-0 to Fulham a couple of weeks ago, and everyone in the way end of that game seemed to feel like it was the end. And, you know, not unsurprisingly at that point, there was about sort of 10-15 minutes in the second half where sort of either side of the fourth goal, I think it was, Forest fans were just singing Cooper's name throughout, and it was a kind of embarrassing performance, but it felt like 3,000 people saying goodbye to him. And then at the end of the game, he came and waved, and everyone assumed that the following day you'd get the old corner flag picture on Twitter. And he stayed for another couple of weeks, which is, it sort of dragged it out a little bit, but is also, I don't know, having that time where we've all sort of assumed it was going to happen has in some ways been quite nice to just kind of, you know, fully appreciate this guy that's, you know, been there for 2 years and has been so significant for Forest.
Yeah, it's quite interesting, Daniel. I mean, like, he's got his army of fans, hasn't he? Like, Forest fans absolutely love this guy.
Yeah, and it's going to be really weird without him in one sense. You know, I do think that Nuno's going to need to get a good start because the mood could go downhill rapidly, I fear. Obviously, his first game will be Bournemouth on Saturday, which is, you know, Bournemouth at home is the sort of game that they'd be hoping to win. But then after that, they've got Newcastle away and Man United at home. And I just feel like without Steve, you know, everyone's complimented Forest on what a great atmosphere it is and how, you know, every game the fans are up for it and the City Ground, you know, it's just louder than even, you know, the years when they're winning the European Cups and et cetera, et cetera. I just feel like that there's a risk that with Steve Cooper no longer there, and yeah, as you say, you can't really, you know, it's very rare to have that connection between a crowd and the football manager. And without that, it's slightly unsettling in one way, just to sort of wonder what it's going to be like on Saturday. You know, what if they go a goal behind? You know, what if it's a nervous performance? You know, what if they lose, basically? You know, how are the crowd going to react? You know, I mean, results changed everything, don't they? So, you know, if they win on Saturday, then all of a sudden the fans will be, you know, talking about Nuno in a much more positive light than perhaps they are at the moment, where it's very divided on from what I've seen online. And It's just, I suppose, it's just a bit of uncertainty, really. Whereas when Steve Cooper was there, the Forest fans sort of felt like they had this kind of guy who was, I know it sounds a bit cliched, but, you know, who was their leader. They identified with him. There was a proper connection, you know, as I say, a rare connection. And every football fan wants that, don't they, with their manager. And so now that's gone, I feel, you know, like people are genuinely quite bereft. You know, I've brought up my son in Manchester to be a Forest fan, which wasn't particularly easy. You know, it's involved a lot of brainwashing. And I've obviously, like, basically kind of like been telling him for weeks now, you know, and sort of since the start of the season that, you know, things aren't good. And, you know, and basically certainly in the last few weeks that, you know, be prepared for me telling you that Steve Cooper's going to be on his way. You know, and when I actually told him yesterday, I was really quite surprised by his, because he looked just genuinely bereft. And, you know, he just turned 15 last week, and I was kind of like expecting him just to kind of like shrug it off. But it was a bit of, it's sort of one of those moments that made me, you know, brought it home. You know, when I take away my own, you know, put my fan hat on, I suppose, rather than being a journalist for a second, it just sort of like, just feel like a lot of people are genuinely quite upset to lose such a person, because they're rare. You know, Forest have waited quarter of a century to have a manager like Steve Cooper.
Just give us a sense of just how much his legacy at Forest is for Forest fans, because, you know, Brian Clough historically is the coach that everyone knows is identified with Nottingham Forest, European success and also great success elsewhere. But since then, you'd probably say he's really the icon at Nottingham Forest.
Yeah, I mean, the other one would be Frank Clark, who took Forest from the second division to Europe in 2 years. And it is a little bit harsh that people sort of almost tend to forget about him after. But it was the you know, 23 years away from being in the Premier League. For a lot of that time, Forest, they got relegated to League One and they kind of had a couple of scrapes of relegation. But for a lot of that time, Forest weren't awful. They were just nothing. It was just this kind of long stretches of ennui that
love that word, ennui.
where it was just very difficult to get excited or kind of inspire any kind of emotion either way, really. And it was sort of there was a real sort of low point when just before Steve Cooper took over, and you know, more or less from the first game, there were things to be excited about again. And you know, winning games is obviously it's pointless to kind of pretend that everyone would still have this great affection for Steve Cooper if he wasn't successful and didn't get Forest promoted. But that build up of 23 years of frustration, then with someone who was successful, only really missed out on automatic promotion from, you know, coming in when Forest were bottom of the Championship, you will see kind of loads and loads of stories about Cooper basically doing things that he didn't need to do, but that endeared him to the Forest fans and the city. So there was a great story that was going around last night about this head teacher in Nottingham somewhere who got a call from the reception saying there's a guy called Steve in reception for you.
It wasn't Cooper, was
it? It was him. No, it was Cooper, because he'd heard about this head teacher had been talking about Forest, and there was a Forest display on the wall. He'd heard about this and he just kind of popped in to say hello and to thank them for their support. You'll have seen, if you ever watch any Forest games, you'll have seen the kind of banners and tifos and stuff in the Trent end. The group that mostly put those together, called Forza Garibaldi, it takes a lot of work to do all that, to kind of prepare all the banners and the everything, put everything on the seats and stuff, which they do before a game. They would quite often, you know, be trudging across the car park after a long day's, you know, banner preparing, and Steve Cooper would be there and would sort of thank them for their support. It's just all sort of things like that, which coupled with the success on the pitch and the, you know, the giving fans something to be excited about after 23 years of mostly nothingness, that's why he was so loved, and that's what the kind of legacy he'll leave.
You're listening to the Athletic Football Podcast with Ayo Akinwalere.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Okay, so, well, Nuno Espirito Santo has been brought in to replace Steve Cooper. And we've also brought someone else in to talk about him as well, Tim Spears. But before we come to you, Tim, let's go to David around this appointment. David, obviously, they would have been searching far and wide to see who they could bring in. Nuno Espirito Santo, I feel like, has divided opinion in so many ways. Who else would have been in the frame for this job?
So very quickly, you heard names like Oliver Glasner, who had done very well at Eintracht Frankfurt and is available. Perhaps the appeal of somebody like him or Julen Lopetegui, who came to the fore, and there seemed to have been some conversations because he was available too. And that might appeal from a financial perspective. You don't have to pay to get someone out of their contract and they'd be ready to go. But ultimately, it's gone the way of Nuno. There's a good relationship with his representative, George Mendes, who has been involved in a number of the player transfers into Nottingham Forest. And Mendes does not represent those other candidates we mentioned there. But obviously, it didn't end well at Wolves at all. It didn't go well at Tottenham at all. That was actually quite a protracted appointment at Tottenham. And we were prepared for this one to drag on a little bit. It got quite difficult around his, I think, some backroom staff, the contract. That didn't end up replicating itself here. Forest have got him in and he's already leading training in preparation for a crucial run of matches. But whether that was the right decision or not, we're going to have to wait and see. They've got a highly regarded sporting director in Ross Wilson, who will be involved in at least the conversations, the analysis around this sort of thing. But we don't know how much autonomy all of these people at Forest get, because we know who the boss is.
Yeah, for sure. Well, David, we're going to have to let you go. We've squeezed you dry of transfer information. And I know it's heading into silly season for you right now. All the transfers, January's on its way. So please leave us and go get some rest if you can.
I will. Thanks, guys.
All right, Tim, let's bring you in here. And I know you've definitely been around Nuno from the Wolf days and also Spurs days as well. And we look at him being in the Saudi Pro League. And I know he won the championship, but consequently has been relieved of his duties. Some might look at this as a bit of an uninspired signing. Is that just for Nuno? Because everyone deserves to prove themselves, don't they? Regardless of what public rhetoric might dictate.
Yeah, of course. I mean, he's been a manager for more than 10 years now, and there is a little bit of recency bias in terms of his reputation, which of course took a hit at Spurs over what was a very short period of time, 17 games, in difficult circumstances with Harry Kane wanting to leave to Man City, or close to leaving for Man City that summer. And he was way down the list in terms of the Spurs pecking order. You know, they had a host of managers turn them down that summer. So it was difficult for him to command the respect of a potentially difficult dressing room with a lot of characters in there, which he struggled with, I think. It was probably a little bit too big for him. But if you look at some of the other work he's done in his career, even before Wolves, he took a little Portuguese club called Rio Ave to Europe for the first time in their whole history. He took Valencia to fourth in the league at a time when it wasn't common for them to do that. Porto, he did okay, finished second. And then the job he did at Wolves was utterly phenomenal, to be honest. You know, he created one of the best teams in championship history, I would say. And that's not me as with my Wolves hat on saying that. And people, they were highly regarded as one of the most stylish and best teams. And again, I think there's recency bias in that, yeah, it ended badly for him at Wolves, and there was some dour football in that last season, which was the pandemic season, which he personally really struggled with. But before that, Wolves played some incredible, intoxicating, exhilarating football, certainly the best I've ever seen at Molineux. And also, you know, the bond that he generated with the fans and the city there was unlike anything I've ever seen. You know, there was a real cult around him, this sort of mythical beard stroking philosopher. You know, they adored him. There was like graffiti of him, like plastered around the city. Yeah. They were in tears when he left. He was in tears when he left. But the thing about the Forest job is it's going to be under very different circumstances. You know, he had a clean slate at Wolves for him and George Mendes to build a team together. It's not going to be the case at Forest. But what he can do, he can organise a team. He's very good defensively. He's quite pragmatic. He can really set a team out. And yeah, he's had a very good career with the success almost everywhere that he's been, which does bode well for us. And he's done things that Cooper hasn't done in his career, which is perhaps what they're looking at. He's taken teams into Europe. He's won titles. He took Wolves to seventh place two seasons in a row and to Europa League quarterfinal, which is like a phenomenal job, which was only sort of 3 years ago.
Nick, I mean, from a Forest perspective, I mean, the CV sounds amazing, by the way, Tim. I'm not, you know, you hear that and you're thinking, okay, maybe the chairman, the owner's got a little something up his sleeve here, but maybe it's just me. But when I heard that name, I wasn't thinking, oh, wow, this is going to be the next level. But also, if we look ahead, and especially the ambition that Forest have, is he the one to take them to sixth, seventh, and then potentially challenge that, you know, fourth spot or whatever? I mean, like, it's quite a gamble.
Steady on, my God. Forest are 17th in the table, so we've got us challenging for the Champions
League. But I mean, from the chairman, from the owner, this is the kind of rhetoric that's coming out, you know?
Yeah, it's impossible to say. I mean, I think the reaction from Forest fans has been quite underwhelmed. And I think a lot of that is informed by, as Tim's spoken about, the what happened at Spurs. I think, for, you know, fairly or not, people sort of disregard whatever he might have done in Saudi Arabia. And there was, as David mentioned earlier on, a couple of slightly or perceived to be sexier names were sort of dangled in Lopetegui and Glasner. But, you know, they might be unfair reservations, but I think that the more kind of considered caveats might be, as Tim mentioned, it was a particular set of circumstances at Wolves which kind of allowed him to succeed. He was able to build that team, and you know, in the Championship had an awful lot of players who probably shouldn't be playing in the Championship who were kind of above that level, and then was able to take that team into the Premier League. Here he will have to, with Forest, he'll have to deal with a very big squad, a squad that feels quite unbalanced, you know, a lot of ball winning central midfielders and not much creativity. Doesn't really have a kind of striker that anyone trusts at the moment, with Taiwo Awoniyi injured until the new year. And then he's following what he had at Wolves. This is the obvious point, that, you know, he was the hero at Wolves, Cooper's the hero at Forest, and he's now got to follow that. He has, his first game is at home to Bournemouth, who, you know, I think people will perceive that as kind of a winnable game, but Bournemouth are obviously playing really well at the moment. There won't be as much patience sort of extended to him by the fans, which is, you know, probably very unfair on him, but it's kind of inevitable given who he's following.
Tim, I'm just back to the Nuno conversation. We're talking about this environment that he's entering, right? Hiring, firing, harsh, you know, some might say toxic. Is this a guy that's built for that environment?
He worked at Valencia at a really tough time in the mid sort of 2010s. Yeah, he was basically told, you've got to finish fourth. That's your job, you've got to finish fourth. And that's they were like the ultimate higher fire club. I think Gary Neville came in sort of shortly after that. So he's used to pressure. Porto as well, huge pressure to win every single match you play. He's used to that. He won't worry about that at all. But one thing he will need is control. That's what he had at Wolves with Mendes. And that relationship is so important. Like, these guys are best friends. Mm-hmm. He's not just a client of Jorge Mendes. He was Jorge Mendes' first client 2 decades ago, and they are best friends, and they work very closely, obviously very well together. When it comes to January, you know, if there's a Mendes client knocking around,
you'll be surprised.
He'll do his friend favours. Of course he will. So that was a hugely important link at Wolves. That's why Ruben Neves moved to the Championship from the Champions League, and Diogo Jota moved to the Championship from the Champions League. You know, he can pull rabbits out of hats, and recruitment was a massive part of Wolves' success. So one thing he doesn't like, which should be pointed out, is being challenged. And, you know, you mentioned Saudi Arabia. There was rumours of a falling out with Karim Benzema, which I wouldn't be surprised at all. You know, at Wolves, and again, this sort of goes against what's happening at Forest, he likes a small, tight squad of sort of trusted players.
Right.
And he doesn't like, and like, if there's like egos and people challenging him, they're out the door. One of his old players told me once that, you don't go knocking on Nuno's door.
Oh, goodness.
You just don't do it. If you're at the team and you want to know why, you don't dare go knocking on that door because he will just tell you where to go. He's a huge personality. It's not always there on the camera. He does turn on the charm for the camera, but he can be horrible. Mm. He said himself he can be the worst person in the world with his moods and his anger. And I can vouch for that. Along the same lines, he really owns a room. He is the boss. He can be very charismatic.
Yeah.
You know, he can make you feel like the smallest person in the room, the way he speaks to you. And then the next day, it'll be big bear hugs and, oh, how's he going with his big smile? So, yeah, he's quite a complex character, sort of an angry introvert. He's actually quite shy. There's a lot to him, but if he'll need results, of course, but if he gets that, the Forest fans could grow to love him like the Wolves fans did.
Yeah. I mean, that is going to be quite... Not so much for the fans, but for the players, it's going to be quite a shift from Cooper, who was very much, you know, doors always open guy.
Let's finish on this. Yeah, huge injuries already. Look at AFCON, several players are going to be leaving. So, you know, got a depleted squad. He's not walking into the easiest circumstances. In the short term, survival surely is the only thing you can really think about now, and then anything else on top is a bonus.
Logically, yeah. I mean, there is a sort of, as Danny mentioned earlier on, there is a possibly a little gap between the expectation of the ownership and what is realistic and what is sensible over the season. I think from this point, most Forest fans would take 17th place. But I think that would be the realistic target for this season. Yeah, as you say, it's a very difficult circumstance for him to come into, whether he will actually make sense of this kind of slightly chaotic club. Who knows, really?
Yeah, well, let's finish there. I want to say thank you to all our guests today, Tim, Danny, Nick, and also David as well. Remember to rate and review the podcast if you have been enjoying it. A one-year subscription is still at the special discounted price of just $19.99. That's dollars and pounds. It would make a lovely little Christmas present, won't it? Simply head over to theathletic.com/footballpod. Back tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening.
You've been listening to the Athletic Football Podcast. The producers were Adonis Pratsides and Guy Clark, with additional production by Mike Stavrou and Jay Beale. The executive producer was AD Moorhead.
The Athletic.